Follow me down this deep, dark hole.
Hello, and welcome to New Horror Express, your weekly podcast channing to the best indie talent the horror genre has to offer. I'm your host, Scott Murphy, and on today's podcast, I'm chatting to writer-director Daniel M. Caniero about his debut feature, El Cerros de los Dioses, aka God's Hill, a found footage mockumentary which satirizes fame and celebrity while offering some nifty horror too. Over the course of the interview, you will hear me talk to Daniel about how he assembled his starry cast, his thoughts on the vagaries of fame, and some of the setbacks the film suffered during filming. Elsewhere, we discuss how the film could set up a potential universe, how the movie blurs the lines between fact and fiction in some of its talking head interviews, and what projects he is currently working on now. All of which and much, much more you can hear right now in my interview with Daniel. Hi, Daniel. Welcome to New Horror Express.
Hi, Scott. Thank you for having me here.
It's good to have you on the show. So we've got you on the show today to talk about your film. The English title is God's Hill. The Spanish title I will attempt is El Cerro de los Dioses.
Something like that. Yeah, that's cool. It's El Cerro de los Dioses. That's pretty good.
All right. And can you give us, first of all, for the audience, can you give us a brief spoiler-free synopsis of the film?
Okay, so the movie, it's a movie about fame and what would you do to get famous, you know, what you're willing to do to be famous, to have success, you know, It's a kind of a mockumentary mixed with some different types of films, you know, because we mix different types of resolutions, cameras, and more or less. So it's a film which is always playing with what is reality and what is fiction, you know. Mm-hmm. But the main thing is what will you do to get famous and digging into the fame part and in a funny way, you know, with some horror inside, you know.
And where did the initial inspiration come from for the film?
Well, the initial inspiration mostly come with an idea I had of an actress, a YouTuber, and a director that go into a village to get an award. And it results that it's not an award what they're getting. They really are there for a ritual, some kind of thing. And in this idea in my head, they finally die and they get slaughtered. So it's like a village that likes to slaughter famous people, and they invite them to with a false pretense of having an award. And so I had this idea in mind for many, many years, but as a form of a short film, maybe, I don't know. And in 2018, in the Sitges Film Festival here in Catalonia, they give me the best director award, something like this. No, best promising director award, alongside with some of the actors which ended in the film. So with these actors, We were talking about doing something together. So I had the idea, I pitched it to them, they like it. So we decided, I decided to do it in the mockumentary way because of production cost, because it's a very independent, it's an independent film with a very low cost, for Spain at least. So that's, the inspiration comes from, you know, these parts of, I wanted for many years to do my first film. This is my first solo director film. I directed Second Units for another feature films, but it's my first solo director film. And I wanted, I tried for many years to do my first film within the industry, but always they fall because, you know, financing or some other things that happened. Because in 2015, I went to LA, to Los Angeles, to shoot my first film too. And well, it's a very bizarre story because the producer and that dying the same day we had to sign up the contract. So it was very crazy. And for many years, I wanted to do this first feature film. And I, with Cerro de los Dioses, I managed to, you know, with these actors and this idea and having this award from Sitges, it gave me the impulse to, you know, to say, well, let's do it. So I write it, I direct it, and I produce it. And that's how it ended being a movie.
Yeah. It'll have to wear a lot of different hats on independent filmmaking. That's what I've discovered in the process of making this podcast and talking to a lot of indie filmmakers. So you co-wrote the film with Borja Figueroa. Yeah. And what was the kind of writing process like between you guys?
Well, actually, I had this idea in mind, like I told you before. And yeah. I wrote a first draft of the whole movie, thinking about the mockumentary and all the actors I had in mind, the ones that they get awarded with me at Sitges. And with this first draft that were like, I don't know, 60 to 70 pages, I contacted Borja because we met, well, we are colleagues here in Barcelona as writers. And I needed someone to end polishing the script while I was working on the pre-production for direction and producing it. So my relationship was, I gave him freedom within, you know, the first drive I made. I say, hey, this is what I want to do. Just please put whatever you want in it. So let's talk about it. But I need someone who can, you know, polish things without me being writing all the time, because I hadn't the time to do that.
And once the script was in the bag, how long did it take? What was the time between that being complete and going into filming? Was that quite short? Or
so the time? Sorry, I didn't understand. The time between finishing the script and shooting it?
Then going into shooting. Yes.
Okay. We had, I think, the first draft was ended like end of January, and we started shooting. It was 1st of May. But actually, that was for the first draft. But we ended having like 16 drafts of the film, because being an independent film, I was rewriting it while shooting for because, you know, some things were too expensive to do for us, so I had to, you know, come with another way, another sequence, another way to tell the story.
And I was wondering as well, you know, like I've talked to various filmmakers making their debut feature, and some feel that there's like a leap upwards going from shorts, you know, to feature filmmaking. And, you know, obviously, like you said, you'd done some shorts beforehand, you worked as an AD and stuff like that. Did you find it was a big leap or not so much?
Well, actually, it's yes, it's a question of yes and no. You know, it's a big leap in some ways. It's not a big leap, I think, if you think about the production needs, you know, because doing a short film, or the difference between doing a short film or a feature film in ways of energy of production, you know, of talking to some friends or some people in the industry, you know, to have sound recording, cameras, whatever, it's mostly similar or the same. If you want to shoot a 5 days or 4 days short film, like in the Cerro de los Dioses, that was 15 shooting days. So it's more or less the same. You know, you have to talk to the same people. You know, you need the same crew to do the film. But in order of the difference, I think it's the energy it needs to do. You know, as a director, it's not the same shooting 5 days, you know, a lot of hours, a lot of decisions, being an independent film. It's not the same 5 days that 15, because you need to know how to, I don't know the word right now, have to reserve your energies, you know, for completing the film, you know, because nevertheless, yeah, you can end up on the 10th day of shooting and you will be very, very tired, and you can maybe be doing the good directions or giving the, you know, the right directions to the actors or mm-hmm. to the crew, you know. So for me, the big difference, it was this one. But I knew that because as you told before, I work as an AD for other directors, and I learned this from other directors that I saw them at day five, and they were exhausted. You know, they couldn't think anything else because they weren't so prepared, and they gave all the energy for in the 4 days. So the fifth day, they were exhausted. So, and it really, you transmit this to the movie too, you know, as a director. Mm-hmm. If you're exhausted, the movie will look not as cool as you pretended to be, you know.
Yeah. So you were very conscious of that, conserving energy, like kind of making sure that you burn out in, you know, week one, and then week two and three were, you know, not so good.
Yeah. That's a thing that I had in mind all the time, because for me, I'm a very energetic man. You know, I can work 16 hours, 20, 24 if I need it, but I can only do it, you know, for a number of days. So I knew that I had to reserve myself and say, no, Danny, let's stop today. Tomorrow will be another day. Let's, you know, let's keep things simple, because if not, the movie will not be as good as you pretend, or maybe you couldn't finish it. That's the worst scenario, you know. So for me, it was very important. That's why I contacted a lot of people that I trust, like Borja, with the script, because I needed someone. Hey, man, I can be doing this, you know, and scripting, I say writing, and producing, directing, and not getting crazy in the middle, you know. So that's why I needed a lot of people helping me with that.
Yeah, and I was wondering as well, you know, like it's independent production, small budget, but you know, for the mockumentary element, you know, you're talking about fame, and there's a lot of people in the movie, and you know, I've looked up to those people, and a lot of them have quite high profile in Spain. How did you manage to assemble your cast and gather those kind of name people with your budget size?
Well, actually, the good thing of being low budget is it's that you can be fearless of asking people. You know, it's like, okay, I don't have a budget, so I don't lose anything of asking. So that's how it worked, more or less. I had some of the big actors. They were the ones that were awarded with me at Sitges. One was Itziar Castro. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's well known in the country, but it's a well known actress here. Yeah, and she's connected to almost everyone in the show business here. So, and it's right. It's a good friend. She's a good sport. You know, she likes to help people, so she helped us a lot with some of the cast. You know, the famous people and all the people. El Cerro de los Dioses is not a, you know, that this typical movie that we shoot in Spain. So a lot of the actors also, when we tell them we're doing this movie in this way, they were like, oh fuck, that's different. You know, I want to be in there. So because I was shooting with them maybe 1-2 days, so it's like, okay, I don't mind being one day. So more of the actors, they didn't get paid because they didn't want it. You know, they say, I don't mind it. It's good for me. So that was the way, more or less. You know, people helping us to assemble the cast, and they, I don't know, they were thrilled to work in a different kind of movie.
And because there was a bunch of kind of name people, was there anybody on the movie you were kind of intimidated to work with, or were you just pretty chill about all that kind of stuff?
So if I was intimidated, as you say?
Yes, like nervous, kind of
nervous, working with. Okay. Not really. No, I can say that. I was nervous in the good way, yeah. Some of the people, yeah, it's... I saw them in movies for a long time, and you know, it's like, oh, I want to work with them. Meeting Alex de la Iglesia, maybe Alain Hernandez, people, you know, Jose Corbacho is a very well-known comedian here. It's a very good guy too. So meeting this kind of people, yeah, I was thrilled to work with them, but not nervous in a way that, oh, will I be, you know, at this, how is it in English, to be a altura, you know, to, oh, I don't know how to translate it. It's a saying in Spanish, but well, I don't know. Yeah, what I mean is that I wasn't nervous for my performing with them, you know.
Okay. Oh, you weren't. Yeah, you weren't nervous that you weren't a good enough director or something.
Yeah, like, that's like a thing. That. Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, I was nervous because I was thrilled to know them and having the chance to work with them.
I have to say that, like, having watched the movie, like, is really one of the highlights in terms of, and like her reality show, and like the slogan for the reality show, the way she says the name of it and does the kind of forever, like kind of Bond theme, is very funny.
It's a very funny thing. The actors came with that, you know. She began to do that, and because all the scene where she's interviewing people at an event, you know, what is La Iglesia, Javier Botet, and it actually, this scene was how is it called? I forgot the word in English and in Spanish.
Was it premiere? Is that what you're looking for?
It was a premiere of another movie, but it was not scripted, you know.
It was improvised.
Improvised, yeah, okay. That's the word. It was all improvised. We were filming some of the famous people interview in the morning, and Itziar called us and say, hey, this evening will be a premiere of a film. They invited me, and I asked if you can go there. You want to go there, and maybe we can do something. Say, okay, yeah, let's do that. Let's go there. So we infiltrate in the premiere, like, you know, press people. And Itziar played the role like, hey, like in reality, hey, I'm doing a reality show right now. It's a new thing. Don't tell anyone. But can I make you some questions? And people will say, okay, yeah, that's cool. And people were freaking out with the questions. Like, what the fuck is this? And after its interaction, we told them, no, it's for a movie. It's, don't worry. You have to sign the paper and whatever. No? But actually, it was all improvised. And when Itziar came to say, Itziar forever, the thing that she does, yeah. I'll look at it and say, Itziar, you have to do it every time. Please, more and more and more. She began to more and more and more. It's very funny.
Yeah. It's real good.
I want to watch a reality show for you know, with its ear and doing this kind of things.
Yeah. I think that would be fun. I was wondering as well, in terms of like, was there much in the way of improvisation elsewhere in the movie?
Yeah, actually, in a lot of parts, it was, we were looking for that, you know. In some of the interviews that we made at the village of Fuente Osat del Campo, which is a little village in Castilla-La Mancha, some of the people there are real people. They're not actors. It's real people talking or being interviewed about real things, you know. So it was improvisating, and well, actually, all the famous people interviews, we were playing improvisation games, you know. They were not scripted. When I interviewing the famous people at the beginning, that they say famous this, famous that, like fame because of that, I have like maybe a 30-40 minutes interview for each of them, you know, because I was doing interviews like, okay, I'm in interviewer, I will ask you questions about film, and your role is this. So you have to, you know, answer me with thinking about your role. So it's, I don't know, I like it very much, because they feel free to, you know, to explore different kinds of answers or reactions. So it's a lot of funny stuff they made in the interviews that I couldn't put it in the movie because of time, you know.
Oh, of course, of course, of course. I was fascinated by that, you know, like the famous people interviews, because I was trying to work out, I wonder if they're playing like a character of themselves, or is this like, are they giving an honest reflection of what they actually think about fame, or yeah. Like I was very intrigued.
Oh, that's cool. That's the thing I told you before. My main thing I want to do it with a film, it's like people, you know, when they end up viewing it, I want them to think what is real and what is not, you know. And that's cool. That's cool that you told me that you have this. Oh man, this is real people acting as themselves or doing a role. There, yeah. That's a thing. The game that the movie is, you know, it's promoting.
Yeah, because for sure, because like I was watching it and I was like, I feel like some of these people are like being like a heightened version of themselves or something, and then there was other ones that I was like, oh, this could be just what they think about like their personal fame. And yeah, I mean, like some of them I'm kind of like, well, hopefully that's not quite what they think, because it doesn't necessarily cast them in the most best light. But yeah, it's definitely interesting, and that kind of game you're playing, I think it's an interesting element to the movie. I was going to ask about the village as well, because again, I wasn't sure if the village was real. I looked it up and I realized it was real. And have the people of the village seen the movie, and what were they, did you get any feedback, positive or negative?
Not all of them have watched it because of the COVID thing, you know.
Of course.
Yeah, and we couldn't go there we have to screen it at the village, and I want to go there, because, well, actually the village it's my wife's and my village. We go there every summer, you know, to have our holidays. So we knew everyone there. That's why we shoot there, you know. So they all, you know, they want to watch a film right now, but unfortunately we couldn't do it because people can gather to watch films there in this community. But some of them watch it before in some festivals where the movie was here in Spain, and all the reviews they loved it. So but mostly because they love their, you know, their village, and having the village in a movie for them it's like a dream come true. So they, I don't know, they love it. They told me very good things about it. They thought it was funny and horrific in some when it needs to be, right?
Yeah, for sure. It's interesting, because like there's a lot of people who get kind of squeamish about horror movies, and I wouldn't necessarily want a horror movie to be set where they're from. I mean, like personally, as a horror fan, you know, I'd love it, but like yeah, you know what I mean?
No, I don't know if I understand it.
What I was trying to say is that some places might be squeamish about having a horror movie set in their village in terms of like putting people off coming, or just being offended that a horror movie was set where they live.
Basically. Yeah, I get it. No, they were thrilled to do a horror film. You know, they actually love horror films in the village, and they love all the idea, and they understand it, because I told them just before that the idea was to make fun of fame and the village too, but in a funny way and respectful way for them. So they play this the character. Well, I told you that some of the characters that were interviewed in the village are real characters from there. So they love that. So they were not afraid of what people will say, or you know, having this image of the village outside of here. I don't know. They love it. They're very good people, and they will. They were very very promoting film. You know.
Excellent. And I was going to talk about like the shoot itself, in terms of that. How smooth was the shoot? Did you have any on-set disasters or anything, or was it pretty good?
Independent filming, you know, it's disasters all the way. So Well, in a normal movie, and you know, in a big budget movie, you have disasters too, but you have money, I guess, to you know, to solutionate. I don't know what that word is right now. So it's
problem solve.
Yes, it's a problem solving, right? So when you're shooting independent film, you have to, you know, be very very creative. One of the very big disasters that happened to us, it was during the shooting of The Ritual in the mountains. Well, you saw The Ritual in the mountains. That maybe I don't want to make spoilers, but I think it's maybe 1 minute and a half, 2 minute steps top. But it was scripted for being like 10, 15, okay. Uh-huh. But actually, we begin shooting this this scene in the middle of the mountains, you know, with a lot of people. We were like between crew and actors, more or less, we were like 60, 70 people there in the mountains with real fire shooting, because I was, for the beginning, I was talking with the DP of the movie, and my obsession with this scene is that I wanted to be only lit with real fire. I didn't want lighting, artificial lightning of any kind, you know.
Yeah,
I wanted like to be as more real, realistic that we could do it. So it was, you know, people playing with fire, 60 people there with gasoline, whatever. Right, it was like a big thing. All was going very very well, you know. It was like, okay, we were shooting like for 2 hours. We had this. Well, I don't know if making spoilers, but it was an actor with a lot of latex, you know, from this guy he was having on. So where we were shooting, I think it's well about 2-3 hours. Suddenly, all the sky turns cloudy, but very very cloudy, very dark clouds. Mm-hmm. It starts raining just a little. They say, okay, don't worry, it will be like 5 minutes. Well, 2 hours later, it was like 2-3 hours raining, like, you know, Noah's Ark. It was crazy. It was, well, we were all like 60 people in several tents, you know, all wet. Yeah, it was. And we only had this day to shoot, because all of the actors, the main actors, not the ones that... That have a masks on, because we could replace them, but all the main actors, they leave the day after that, so we had to shoot it this night. So you know, when it stops raining, all the wood was wet, so we couldn't play with real fire, so we had to go and grab some lighting to finish the scene, because we shoot it 2 hours with real light, with real fire, and the other ones, like, it was like, yeah, we managed to have fire again, but you know, it was, because it was all wet, the fire lasted like 1-2 minutes, and it was crazy, man. And the actor with the latex, it was all the latex was falling down, you know. It was like, fuck, man, I don't know what to do with it, you know.
Oh, man.
It was our lowest point, and it was like in the 12th or 13th day of shooting, so we only had left like 2 days, and we were thinking, oh, fuck, man, we're this close to end, and this is the ending of the film for me. It's the climax, you know. It's the You're waiting for it, all the film, because we're talking about it in all the film. It's going to happen this. And then it's, fuck, we have to do it right. So I came with an idea while shooting that, you know, editing it, you know, like say, okay, we can do it. And maybe the ritual will be not 10, 15 minutes, but we can do it with 2 minutes and it will work. But it was intended to be more spectacular, you know?
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah, wow. Yeah. That's, but you managed to pull it. We still managed to pull off. That's still pretty impressive.
Oh yeah, man. For me, it's, I don't know. I told you, I'm very energetic guy and I don't surrender very quickly and very easily. So I, when I saw what happened, I said, okay, we have to do it. So we only have tonight in this way to do that. And the thing I had to give part of the help that all the crew and all the actors give to the movie, because they were freezing out there, you know, they were like, okay, with their their motivation was low because, you know, 2-3 hours waiting in a tent while raining, it's not the best scenario at night, you know. It was 2-3 a.m. at night, so it's hard to be with nothing to do in these cases and then shoot again, you know. So but they gave all the energy and they gave all they had to the film, so I'm very grateful with all the people that work at the film, because we ended up being friends all of us. So it's I'm very proud of it. You know, it's like sometimes when you do independent films, you know, people get angry with everyone because, you know, it's no money, no time, no technical resources. But in this case, we had it all. We could make a movie and end up being friends. So I'm very happy with that.
And talking about independent filmmaking, it forces you to wear a lot of hats, and one of those hats for you is you did some visual effects on the film. What visual effects did you do? And I noticed that from your credits as well, you've done visual effects and other things as well. And how'd you do that?
My name is in the credits in all part, because I did a lot of stuff in the movie at the end. But in VFX, I had some of the photographs, you know, with the mayor of the town, of the village.
All right, okay.
The photographs, he's with Obama, he's with Alex de la Iglesia, I do some of them. I don't remember, some of the motion graphics from the YouTuber, I did it too. Because I have a past in 3D animation and motion graphics, so I know how to do stuff, but I didn't want to do it in the film. But in order to get it finished with the deadline that we needed to deliver it, so I had to do that too. All the credits are mine too. You know, the bars with the credits.
Yeah,
I did it too. It's a simple thing, but I like it because I was looking for a simple idea. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I think it summons the look and the tone of the film too, you know.
Yeah, for sure. I was wondering, you know, like, kind of, you know, all the different faces in the film, and some, you know, many of which I didn't know and some which I did. And like you mentioned Alex de la Iglesia, you know, I know some of his work, One of the kind of interviewees is the actress Macarena Gomez,
oh, yeah.
Who I've seen in various horror films, and I was kind of wondering what it was like to work with her, because from seeing her in other films, she seems like a pretty intense character.
Macarena, it's very intense. I loved doing the interview with them with her, because it was. It was a crazy interview. I was, you know, I told you about me wanted to play with reality and fiction.
Yep.
So she played with me in this interview. I was at the end of the interview, I was thinking, I don't know if it is real or is fiction, because I don't know what's happening here, you know? So she was playing with me, and I loved that, because I think it transmits into the film.
Yes.
But she's a great it's a great actress, of course, and it's a great human being. So It's intense in order that she likes to, you know, she takes the roles at the end of its consequences, you know, and I love her for that because, you know, at the end, I told you in the interview, I began, because we were playing, we were role playing, you know, and improvising. I was like doing interviewer and asking questions at, you know, at where we had like 10, 15 minutes of interview. I was wondering, I don't know if she's, answers are true or not, because I couldn't, you know, differentiate in between reality and fiction. It's because she's a great actress, actually. It's a great actress because she cares about character, and she, I don't know, she's great. She's great, man.
Yeah. I mean, like, yes, I mean, like, I've seen her in a few things, in like Dagon and the Shrew's Nest and a few other things. I think she is a great actress from the things I've seen her in.
No, I can tell you, she's a great actor, and she improvising. It's great. It's very. It's the best. You know. It's. I don't know. She ended up crying on set, you know, without asking her, you know, but because, and when she started crying, I stopped the interview and said, "Hey, Macarena, are you okay?" Because I wasn't sure if it was real or fiction, you know. And then she looked at me and started yelling me in character, inside character still. And I was like, "Fuck, man, she's playing me. Fuck." My camera was looking at me like, "Fuck, what do I do?" Still recording, and just say, "Oh man, no, keep it shooting." It was very crazy, man. And at the end, she just break all character and say, "Hey, I fooled you, right?" I say, "Fuck, man, yeah, you fooled me."
Wow.
Yeah, she's that good. She's that good. I love this. That's awesome. This interview. I love her.
That's really good. Talking about the acting side of it, did you ever consider putting yourself in the movie, possibly as part of like the documentary crew?
Oh, okay, I'm in the movie. I'm in a very small scene, buying groceries in Gora's market.
Right. Okay.
The guy who's buying stuff and gets out, it's me. So yeah, I'm in the movie. I'm in the movie, and actually, my voice is also in the movie at the beginning. Mm-hmm. But this is because we didn't have an actor, and I say, I'll do it. It's the voice of the producer that tells Paula, that the main character, that tells her to get down the zipper. You know, that say, "Hey, we need to see a little more of your breast." You know, so that's my voice. Yeah.
Oh, okay. But you never considered putting yourself in as like the Mark character or something like that?
Oh, no, man. I like being behind the camera, not in front of. So no. It's not the thing that I'm not comfortable with this, you know. I maybe could do it for a friend, you know, for an old director, because I like playing, playing as an actor, maybe, but I think I'm not prepared, you know, to direct myself into a movie. I'm not for my first movie, you know. It's a no.
Okay, yeah, no problem. And I was wondering, kind of watching the film as well. I don't want to spoil the film too much, but. Trying to think of the best way to phrase this that doesn't spoil the film, but does mean that I can ask this question. Okay. Is could you imagine that the thing that happens in the film happens elsewhere in the world, setting up potential sequels?
Oh, okay, yeah. That's cool. So you try to not spoil. That's cool. It's one of my ideas. It's to. I would love to make, you know, or sequels, or prequels, or maybe remakes, because it can happen anywhere in the world. Yeah, definitely that thing that happens. I think it could happen anywhere, and in my mind happens. You know, But I like the idea that that it happens globally, it's the proposal I make in the film, no? that all the, well, I don't know how to make it without spoiler. But the thing that happens in this village only, you know, it's like, yeah, this little village in Spain that no one knows, even in Spain, maybe no one knows it. And all the world comes here to do that, you know. So, that's a funny thing for me to think.
Yeah, no, it's certainly an amusing concept, but it only happens there. But yeah. I was kind of thinking like, I wonder if there's like an international community, all doing this thing, and they're part of like
we can do a TV show with that, you know. Yeah. I would love to expand the idea of this world, you know. It will be great.
Yeah. It's interesting as well you say about like a prequel, like a possible the origin of what this is.
Why is having this?
So I was going to ask as well, in terms of like, I know that you recently played at the Soho Horror Fest. Was that the first festival you played at outside of Spain?
If this was the first one, are you asking me? Sorry,
I'm asking that. Yeah, you recently played at the Soho Horror Film Festival in the UK. Was that the first festival you've played at outside of Spain?
No, it was not the first. The first one was in, it's in Slovenia.
Slovenia. Okay.
Yeah, that was the first festival we showed the film outside Spain was in Slovenia, which is the Crossman Fantastic Film and Wine Festival. Great festival to be there. Great people there too. I love them. Marco and all the crew.
Oh, so were you actually there? Was this pre-pandemic or
it was pre-pandemic, yeah. Okay. It was a pre-pandemic thing, so I was there enjoying the festivals like before, you know. I don't know what will happen in the future, but well.
And what was that kind of like a big issue? I mean, obviously it's been a big issue for everyone, but in terms of like playing at festivals, were festivals dates lined up pre-pandemic that subsequently got cancelled?
So sorry, I didn't understand. Can you repeat?
Did the pandemic wipe out some festival dates for the film?
A lot of them. Yeah. We had some festivals that couldn't make it, so we couldn't also be in them. So, and because we had to, it was with the festival, with the premiere in Spain too, in theaters, the theatrical premiere, because being an independent film, we managed to have a distribution company here in Spain that they wanted to put the movie in theaters, and we finally did it. But the date was April 24, so it was in the middle of the pandemic, so it was impossible. And later on, we premiered on October 13th. 30, yeah, 30, yeah, like in trying to be Halloween, you know. But it was like a second wave, third wave, I don't know which kind of wave of the pandemic here in Spain, and it was like not a lot of theaters. It was a very little, you know, premiere, but I don't know, it's good. But yeah, definitely with festivals we miss a lot of that of them because of the pandemic.
And are you, will there be more like after the Soho Horror Film Festival, is there more festival dates lined up in terms of international festivals, or do you have international distribution?
We do not have yet this international distribution. We want it. We have a national one in Spain right now. But we wish to close a deal for international distribution, sales agents, whatever. Because the main thing of the film, I want people to see it. I don't care about the money, maybe, you know, but I want people to enjoy it, see it, and you know, it's a movie made to watch, I think, and to make people having fun. So that's the thing. Yeah, we're looking for that. So if anyone is listening and knows about someone, so we're open it. And for other festivals, we're just looking for them to, you know, we don't have anything closed yet, because we were before Soho Horror, we were at Fantaspoa, Morbido, you know, in Brazil and Mexico, and other countries. So we're looking for new festivals to, you know, to have the opportunity of being part of the movie, and people, an audience, can enjoy it and watch it. You know, that's the main thing I want from the film, that people can watch it.
And how's the festival reaction been so far? It seemed pretty positive from Soho Horror Film Festivals, or like.
I don't know for Soho Horror Film. I have to ask because I don't know actually. But I don't know. I hope it is. In many of the festivals, all the reactions are positive. In some festival we had like not bad reactions, but people were thinking that they were going to watch a pure horror film. So when you see my film, and you realize it's not a horror film per se. You know, it mixes a lot of things. It's comedy. It's horror. Yeah, it's maybe drama in some parts, but you know, mostly it's a comedy horror film. So more people were thinking because of, you know, advertising of some festivals that did, it's like, okay, a horror film, you know, and in a rural Spain, say, hey man, it's not a horror film about rural Spain. It has some of it, but it's mostly for me, it's a comedy that has some horror in it. So yeah, people like the film, but all of some of them were telling me that, hey, I expected more to watch more horror part. The last part was genius, but I want more of this in the film. I say, yeah, but it's, you know, it's a half-whole film. It's some horror and it's comedy. So it's, yeah, well, I don't know. People were thinking to go watching another film. So that's the thing. But mostly it was a very positive reaction. I think because people... in Spain, mostly they're not used to watch this kind of films. We don't do mockumentaries, you know, like maybe in the States or in other parts of the world. But and they like the proposal.
Okay, so it's not a kind of common subgenre in Spain at all.
No. It's we're beginning to do some more or less mockumentary, you know, femme fatale. But it's not a common genre here. For no, it's not. I can think maybe of 5-6 movies in the past like 7-8 years. So
okay, and I was kind of curious about that as well. Like you know, how conscious you were of that, of like trying to strike that balance just right in terms of like the comedy to horror quotient.
Yeah, actually, yeah, it was another one of the big deals for me, you know, this balance, because I think it's a very thin line that you can cross between comedy and horror, and if you don't do it okay, it could, you know, the horror will be comedy part, you know, maybe the comedy part is the horror film. So and I was very aware, and all the crew were very aware of it, and trying to do our best, you know, to have this balance of we have not to forget that this is a comedy, you know. For instance, you know, the premise is it's a comedy thing, you know. It's like a fuck, it's crazy, and it begins as a comedy, you know, with this the interviews of the famous people telling what fame is from them. So for me, that was, hey, this is a comedy, and then some horror, something has happened, you know. So but it's for me, the intro of the film says a lot of what you will be watching, you know, next. So yeah, it was hard to balance it, but we did, thanks to also to Guy Baibé, which is the editor of the film, that because in addition is where we work more, a lot of it, you know, of having this balance well distributed amongst all the films.
I think you're right. I think you know, when you watch the film, you know, like it sets its tone up pretty immediately, and I think you can tell it is more of a comedy horror than it is a horror comedy.
Yeah.
And I think it's you know, it's fine to do that as long as you kind of like you kind of flag it up to the audience and flag up, you know, what they're supposed to take seriously and not take seriously. Which
So, sorry, what did you say? The last part?
I was just saying that, you know, as long as you're kind of, you know, it's good to do as long as you kind of flag up what the audience is to take seriously and what it's not to take seriously.
That's a thing. That's the main thing. I hope I did it right. I don't know. You tell me. You saw the movie.
Oh no, I think the film accomplishes it. I think like there's certain things that the film is obviously is very serious about, and there's a lot of it where it's like this is the segment of the film that you're supposed to take seriously, and then there's a lot of it that you're not supposed to take seriously. It's supposed to be funny, and it is.
Yeah, because it's as I told you, it's a thin line, you know. It's not easy sometimes, you know. As we spoke with the character of Itziar Castro doing this reality show, you know, she's funny there, but she has to be another kind of character in at the end, you know. It has to be more horror son of a bitch, you know. It's a different kind of character at the end, and in the interviews, she's different too. You know, it's funny, but not the same kind of funny. So it also mixes different kinds of comedy and horror thriller, maybe.
Yeah, for sure. And I suppose, like in terms of the comedy in the film, is that your thoughts on obviously it's a kind of satire on fame, yeah. And it seems like you have a maybe not a negative view of it, but like it certainly pokes fun at it in an entertaining way.
But it's totally, for me, it's just a satire on fame, and yes, it's mostly most of them are my thoughts about fame and how I see it and how I perceive it, you know. But not for me, it's fame and fame, you know. It's different kinds of fame, and it's the fame you got because you did something, you know, and maybe you were not asking for it, so you only did, you know, a YouTube video or an Instagram photograph or whatever, and someone posted it, and you went viral, you know, but you weren't looking for it. So it's this kind of fame that, okay, people likes it, that's cool. But that's, for me, that's the satire on what I wanted to reflect is these people that are looking actively for fame, you know, at all costs. They didn't mind what to do to get it, you know. So that's, for me, what I wanted to put in this movie, you know, my thoughts about it, you know, this kind of people that live on fame, because if they not the famous, they will have a mental issue, you know.
It's kind of crazy.
Well, it's kind of crazy, but it's kind of our new reality right now, you know, with all the stuff in the media, in, you know, YouTube videos and tweets, whatever. Everyone's, you know, thinking of, I had to do this video so people will follow me, and if people follow me, I will get this for free, or will, I don't know, five men. You don't have to think this way. If you think this way, you have a problem, you know. It's, life is not, that doesn't work in those terms. So for me, the movie has this, it has these thoughts also in it. Being a comedy and being a horror film too, for me, it has this message attached to it. You know, it's this message like, hey man, fame, it's not the solution, you know? So live
absolutely
your life.
Absolutely not. And I think, it does, it definitely comes through that message. And I agree that when people say, when fame is the goal itself, not like doing something, whether that be you know, like acting or singing or dancing, painting, writing, whatever it is, you know, like when it's just fame is the thing, then I think there's something unhinged about that.
Yeah, there's something wrong with it. So we can talk about it for hours, I think, and many people will think differently, supposedly, because there's people who likes it, but that's the stuff. Maybe I'm wrong, you know. Maybe in the future, fame will be a currency. I don't know. Maybe I don't know.
I don't know. I hope not. But
I hope not too. But I don't know. Maybe in 10 years and someone listens to the podcast and laughs and say, these people didn't know about it. They didn't know nothing about it. But I don't know. But that's my like way of thinking it. And that's what I wanted to put in the movie.
And so as we kind of come towards the end of the interview, I just wanted to ask what you're currently working on now.
Well, I'm currently working in different projects. Right now, I'm in post-production of a new short film that I showed last year in October. It's called Luna. It's Moon in English. It's a Spanish name too. I think in English it could be a proper name for a people, right? Moon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So it's Luna. It's called Luna. It's horror. This is more pure horror. But it's a short film, not a feature. But we're working in the post production, and I want to have it finished like for maybe a month or 2 months from now, and it hopefully will go for festivals and see what happens. And meanwhile, I'm also working with my next feature film, which is called Deviant. That the script, which is mine too. It went for all markets and festivals too, pre-pandemic. It was in Blood Window last year. Well, not last year, in 2019. Mm-hmm. And it has a lot of awards. So we have some financing of the film from Spain, and we're confident to be shooting it in maybe September, October this year. Hopefully it will, the virus will tell, you know, but hopefully we'll shooting it this year. We're supposedly to shoot it last year, but you know, pandemic, it kills everything. So I'm working with this film, with this short film, and some other projects I have in mind that you know, I'm developing, mostly of them are in the horror genre, because it's what I love. It's what I want to do for a living, but well, I know I have to do other projects too that maybe are not in the horror family. But I love horror films, and I will keep fighting for them. So that's the main thing.
Yeah. Excellent. That's exactly what we want to hear on this program. Cool. So I very much hope that you keep making horror movies, and I look forward to checking out your future work. And it just leads me to say thank you very much for coming on the show, Daniel.
Oh, thank you to you, Scott. It was a pleasure being here. Thank you for, you know, watching the film and, you know, spreading the word for all around the world.
That was my guest, Daniel, there, who I'd like to thank once again for coming on the show. And as always, I'd like to thank you, listener, for tuning in to this latest episode of New Horror Express. Remember, if you like what you heard, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. Unfortunately, that's all for this time, but be sure to join me again next time when I will have another great guest from the world of indie horror. Until then, though, see ya!